Welcome to Blueprints for Brilliance Coaching Insights, a podcast by coaches for coaches. Our guests share their hard-won wisdom to help you grow your coaching business and create a life of success. So get ready to unlock the blueprints to your success.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. Thank you so much for joining me. And I'm excited to introduce you to Jimmy Burrows, not the one that was associated with the Cheers show. We already clarified that. If you all remember that. His company is JBL High Performance, and he is a high performance leadership coach. So welcome to the show, Jimmy Burrows.
Today's episode is sponsored by our Profit Clarity Masterclass. If you've been avoiding your finances and promising yourself you'll deal with it later, you're not broken, you're normal. Join us for a free live masterclass to learn a simpler way to bring clarity and relief. Visit lessmathmoremoney.com and we look forward to seeing you there.
Thanks so much. It's wonderful to be here and I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, me too. So tell us a little bit about how you became a high performance leadership coach. What's your journey?
I don't know if anybody grows up in school and says, when I grow up, I'm going to be a high performance leadership coach. I think it's one of those things that you'll find your way into by serendipity. So very brief background. I am an ex-British military army officer. So I spent my first few years of my career graduating university and my first gig out of university, first job, growing up job was Gulf War II. So baptism of fire in terms of learning about myself, about leadership, about building teams and operating in high pressure environments. And I really enjoyed the 6 or 7 years I did in the military where I had a busy operational schedule of operations. So going on operations into Iraq, Afghanistan, places like that, but also some really interesting training jobs where I was able to learn how to be a great instructor, learn how to be a facilitator, learn how to create training programs and so on. And that, I guess, stood me in good stead when I moved into the corporate world with a view to earning a bit more money and being a bit safer and learning about a new environment where I thought some of my problem solving skills and my abilities could be put to good use. So I had a very enjoyable 12 or so years in the corporate sector working in various parts of HR before I got bored of being in HR because I felt that often HR got in the way of the business with processes that were administrative and burdensome and academic and the business is busy trying to make money. So I decided to go and become a GM of an operational division and essentially learn how to build high-performing teams in an operational sense versus in a theoretical HR sense. And no disrespect to HR, they do a great job in many organizations, but equally, I think there's different perspectives on the way to get high performance. And one of the things I learned being an operational GM is there's lots of things in the system that get in the way of a team doing great. So even if you're doing leadership development and you're doing training and you're doing engagement and culture and all these things, often the system is getting in the way. And it's when you're rowing boat and everybody's rowing as hard as they can in different directions at different speeds and you've still got the rope attached to the jetty and so the boat's not going anywhere or it's going around in circles. And this is what I learned being a GM. So when I then finished that part of my career and went out and started my consulting business 8 years ago or so, it was taking those two pieces. It was the ability to do training and build high performing teams, but also the ability to spot operational friction and commercial challenges and solve for those, helping leaders to be better leaders. So that's what I've been doing for the last 8 years. I have been working with some wonderful companies, had the real privilege of helping some incredible leaders on their journeys. And I'm genuinely doing the best work of my life, having the most fun I've ever had in Jimmy 3.0 version. And it's awesome. So yeah, that's my story.
I love that Jimmy 3.0 version. Is also enjoying the sunshine, if I'm not mistaken.
Occasionally, I try to. Yeah, we spend about half of our year in Cabo in Mexico and the other half of the year in central Mexico in the highlands where there's great cheese and wine. So that's really the reason for being here is we have a self-imposed mission to test cheeses and wines from the area in purely scientific fashion, just to make sure that the quality is high.
Absolutely. Maybe we should do this podcast from there next time.
Look, more than happy to extend an invitation.
I love that. Okay, back to high performance leadership coaching. What do you love about what you do? I know you said it sounds like it brings your two talents and your two bulk of experience together, but what's the best part?
Yeah, having burned out in 2017, I was working in an organization where we were going through so many changes at the same time that it became overwhelming. And I was one of, I think, 7 or 8 GMs who joined the business during this transformation period. And I was the last but one to leave because as everybody's burned out, quit or left. And this organization was dysfunctional because the executive didn't have clarity of direction where they were really going. There were lots of different agendas working at the same time. They were we're changing the customer acquisition model whilst changing the delivery model for building the operation out, whilst changing to an outsourced provider for customer onboarding, whilst moving the actual building, like the physical structure of the organization around to new buildings and new constructions and all sorts of other things. And it was really overwhelming. And I saw all these leaders around me trying their hardest to do a good job, but just like wading through treacle to try and achieve any sort of success. And I also saw lots of leaders who were really confused about what success even looked like. Now, what should I be doing? Where should I be putting my time and energy? How do I get people to work and be motivated when they're hanging on by the fingernails? And I had a conversation this morning with a CEO, and he said, I just can't seem to get through to my people. They're not listening. And I said, it's really hard to listen when you're drowning, and people can't have adult grown-up conversations when they're drowning. And so when I burned out, I took some time out in 2017 and recuperated. But whilst I was recuperating, I was trying to work out, why did this happen to me? Why did I burn out? What did I do wrong? And what did the system do wrong that caused all this to happen? And I've got quite an analytical brain. I'm a scientist by training. It wasn't just my boss was a bad person and the system was against me and the world was against me. It was like, they made some really bad choices along the way. And I called them the I'll just choices. I'll just work late tonight. I'll just work this weekend. I'll just keep the laptop open whilst I'm watching TV. I'll just skip that healthy dinner for a takeaway. I'll just miss the gym. I'll just skip that social event. And when you I'll just yourself enough, those little 1% choices build up into burnout. And so to answer your question directly, the reason I love what I do is because I can now see those things, having made all the mistakes myself, and I can turn them into really practical, down-to-earth, simple concepts, stories, ideas like this that can make another leader go, maybe I won't make that mistake. Maybe I'll do a little bit differently. And what I try and create is this ripple effect. I call it the pebble in the pond. Imagine you drop a pebble in the pond and it ripples outwards across an organization. When we work with leaders, whether they're managing directors of organizations, small organizations, or they're more senior leaders in large organizations, we see the organization move by shifting the way they operate. And there is nothing more satisfying or engaging than changing people's lives, literally. And I don't say that in a flippant way. We're genuinely shifting, keeping people in work, keeping people paying their wages, keeping relationships together, shifting people's mental health, shifting performance of teams, just by practical, simple steps that you can remember, like 1, 2, 3, ABC. That's how we build all the stuff we do. And that's why I love what I do, is because we're actually changing people's lives for the better, so they live a better life. And that's what this is all about for me. It's not about money and success, and they're lovely to have, cool. But when you can talk to somebody and they're like, that moment in that session that you ran where I suddenly realized I wasn't doing it right, or I could do it differently, or I could have that conversation differently, and I changed it, and this is what happened, that's what I live for now.
Oh, I love that. So grateful for people like you, because I think organizations in and of themselves are not necessarily bad. And if there's one bad person, it doesn't necessarily ruin everything, but wouldn't it be great if these people could all live their best lives and support the mission of the business?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people out there who do leadership. I think where we've carved ourselves a bit of a unique niche is we don't really do leadership. We do how you think, how you act, what you believe. We shift that stuff as opposed to shifting, here's a skill to delegate, here's a crucial conversations tactic. They're great. But if you don't believe that those things are going to work, or you've got a mental barrier to those things being utilized, you're never going to do them. The other thing I know, I think we're different to many organizations that do leadership, is we don't really focus on front line leaders. There are plenty of organizations that do, but what I've noticed through 25 years of working in leadership is the engine room of an organization, where it makes or breaks, is that layer who are reporting into the executive. It's the head of division, head of SVP, director, GM level. And so we focus on building great future GMs, because they're the ones that are generally stepping up to managing managers, and they're having to do some new things. They're not managing people anymore, they're managing managers. And they're not really clear on what that means and what that involves. And nobody really teaches that stuff. So that's where we focus, and that's where we can make a big difference. The reason I love doing that is because that's where the pebble in the pond effect, it has its greatest effect. If you're in an executives, it's really long-term stuff, right? It's 3 to 5 years of implementation. Frontline leadership, you've maybe got 8 to 10 people you can move if you make a difference. But when you're working on these future GMs, they've maybe got 100 to 5,000 people working for them. And so when you move them, you move an organization, you shift the entire climate that organization operates in. And that's really satisfying.
Oh, that's exciting. The as well. So do you find that there are any issues with like upper management when you're working on a particular level and you want to help them with their mindset, with their environment, with their thought process, but it maybe conflicts a little bit with some of the higher ups?
Absolutely. Often, frequently. I'm conscious of not going into too much detail because of time, but one of the core criteria for us choosing to work with an organization is executive alignment with the leadership aspirations of the HR team or the leadership function. Often in the early days, a well-meaning HR or manager or GM would say, hey, come in and do some leadership stuff. And you'd really try and move the dial. But the leadership team at the executive level would be focusing on something else, or it would just be one of those other nice to have things that wouldn't get the traction that you wanted to be able to move the business. So now part of our criteria is I like to meet all of the executive team before we engage. So before we sign a contract, I want to meet the executive team, I want to understand where leadership sits in terms of their priorities and how involved they're going to be in whatever initiative that we put together. Then we have our executives opening all of the sessions. For example, in our Amplify program, we have 3 months of working together with any organization, but we have an executive open every session with a 2 to 5 minute story about their own leadership. And then at the end of the program, we invite all of the executives back to watch the presentations to see what everybody's learned during the course of the program. So everybody does a kind of 10-ish minute presentation in small teams. This is what we got out of Amplify. And again, we want the executive there to pay attention. Now, this has a couple of really important factors. Number one, it gets the executive tuned in to what's this program all about and what are our people learning about? Because these are people who are 1 or 2 layers below me. So they're going to be starting to think and act differently. So we're kind of showing them what happens and we give them a kind of a mini snapshot of that program. It also tells the people on the program that this is important and you need to turn up because the executive are turning up. So you need to turn up. And the fact that they're there at the end as well is that kind of recognition that you've gone through 3 tough months of trying some new stuff, learning a new language and speaking a new language. And this is a good thing that, you know, we recognize that for you. So I think, you know, we want them on board. The other thing we've learned over the course of many years of doing this is that one-up leader from the participant is a really critical linchpin point. So if it's an executive, great. But if there's a level in between, it's that one-up leader. And so we feed them talking points through the course of the program. So every month we're like, oh, Jean's just been talking about trust building this week. And some of the methodologies that she might want to use to build trust are this and this. Why don't you have a conversation about trust with her and notice how she is trying to employ some of those things? So what we're subconsciously doing is positioning the leader to lead better because we're giving them the tools to do it. But we're doing it in a way that they feel like they're supporting their participant, which is a good leadership tactic. So either both ways, we're manufacturing leadership engagement to promote the success of the program, which is why Amplify has had such great success, is because it genuinely does get traction in the business and move the dial. But we're very careful about who we work with because of that. If we don't see the signs of leadership and executive engagement at the start, then generally we'll either say, look, we need to do some preparatory kind of on-ramp work with you, runway work to get your leadership team to where they need to be, or this isn't the right avenue for you and we're not the right business for you. If you want somebody who can just come and do some training and do some magic tricks that won't have any traction and won't make any difference, that's not us. We're here to actually move the dial for you. So either we can work with you to get you to the point where you're ready to start, or you can find somebody else. And we do that in a really polite way, but we're very conscious of the results that we deliver.
Yeah, I love that. I love how you have, obviously this is from experience, that you all of it, because you've really got it down to, we've got to get a buy-in from everyone, especially the leadership. And then I also love how you bring them into the process. Even just that little bit makes it so important for everyone. Yeah. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, I've learned all the wrong way to do things. So now I can hopefully start doing things a bit better. And hence my books and everything is all written from personal experience of the wrong ways to go about doing everything. And here's how not to do that. So you can keep going and not make the same mistakes.
I know. And sometimes it's so hard, especially when like you now know who are the right clients. And sometimes as you're growing your business, it's hard to say no. Even though you know they're not the right clients.
And we've all made that mistake, right? We've all worked with the high maintenance client or the client who's not engaged or the difficult client. One of our business values now is we like to do business with people we like to do business with. And it's so key. If I wouldn't go out for dinner with you, if I wouldn't meet your family, if we don't have each other's WhatsApp numbers and we're not chatting, we're probably not the right fit. And I've learned that over 8 years of doing this. But literally now when I go to various countries, most of my evenings or my mornings are breakfasts and dinners with previous clients who are often still current clients, but because we're genuinely become friends doing the work that we do. And that, I think that has two pieces. Both we've chosen well in terms of the clients that we've got, but also we've delivered results for them. So we maintain that kind of status and trust. And often we'll be called up for, can I just run this by you? Or can I just check this with you as a sounding board? And I always say, you're a client for life. Once we're clients, we're a client for life because we've built a relationship. And so you can pretty quickly tell like, would I go out for dinner with you and your family? If the answer is no, in my mind, maybe they're not the right client for you to choose and pursue. And it just makes everything easier. It's less salesy, it's less difficult, the conversations flow better, the trust builds more authentically. There's a lot of neuroscience that sits behind all this, and we're doing it very deliberately. But from the outside, it looks like we just like to work with cool people. That's great. We're happy with that.
Yeah. And when you work with people that you connect with, everybody wins. They have a great experience. You have a great experience. You both understand each other. And like you said, there's a mutual trust. There's a mutual respect. So I love that.
I think one of the things you said just before we started is the people that are listening to this episode are entrepreneurs who want to grow their business. I think until you're at 10K a month, just take whatever work you can get, just pay the bills. But once you hit that kind of 10K a month mark, you can start to be a little bit more selective on doing the work that you love to do, having a core offering of IP that you can share rather than custom building things. And I think these are really useful things to be aware of as you grow. Because if you're at 20K a month and you're still doing custom work for everybody and chasing everything, it's exhausting. And by the time you get to 30 or 40K a month doing that, you're going to burn out because you're spreading too many different directions and you're not working in flow or in your sweet spot. Just being conscious of that. And so you can pay your bills, take anything you can get. But after that, start to be clever about it. And then you get to do the best work of your life. And one of my measures of success now is actually freedom, not money. So I have a young daughter, I have a family. And for me, the ability to take this afternoon off because my wife has a few meetings and I want to just go and hang out with my daughter for the day is far more valuable to me than another few meetings and a client. So being conscious of what's your measure of success? Is it the size of your bank balance, the size of your house, the car you drive? Or is it not having to work today because you don't have to worry about it anymore? You can just spend some time with your family and do hobbies and slow start or listen to some cool music or cook in the kitchen or whatever it is you love to do. How often do you get to do that?
Yeah, quality of life.
Completely.
And it's interesting too, because I think, like you said, in the beginning, you've just got to get clients in. But once you start to listen to yourself, you instinctively know what kind of clients you enjoy, what kind of clients listen and work at what you want them to do, because sometimes it's just beating your head against the wall. You're trying to help them, but they're not engaging. They're not making it happen. And those are so frustrating, even if you do get along with them. But working with the right people is so rewarding.
Completely. I don't know if you've read The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss, but he tells a beautiful story in that book where he was running his supplements business and it was just exhausting. He was doing 20 hours a day answering emails and solving problems and whatnot. And he made this conscious choice. He looked at his client base and he had two criteria. Where does 80% of my revenue come from? And where do 80% of my problems come from? And the 80% of revenue was his initial shortlist and 80% of the problems was the strike list. And he was left with a smaller client group of people he loved working with who paid him good money. And he then said, I'm going to get rid of all of the other clients. I'm going to put all of my energy that previously been spent problem solving, dealing with niggles, solving issues, and go out and put all my energy into finding more clients like my dream clients. And I can't tell you how many times in this part of my career, I've let go of a client who I felt we've reached the end of something or I'm not feeling it anymore. And it creates this energetic vacuum and another client comes in that's even better. And suddenly I'm working with another dream client. And I can't tell you how many times it's happened. So if you're just holding on to that client because you're desperate to keep a little bit of money running in, you might be energetically blocking the dream client who's just around the corner because you're not open to it. You haven't got the space and capacity and energy to let them in. And it's a bit more spiritual and woo than what we were talking about previously. But I think it's so true. And I've had it happen like multiple times where I've said, okay, that's enough of that. I'm going to take a break. And then somebody calls you up, Samsung call you up or whatever it is. And they go, okay, hey, we wondered if you could do something with us. And it's the most amazing sensation, but it happens all the time.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. Energetically bringing people in, manifesting things happening when you're ready and you're open and you're looking for it, it shows up. That's brilliant. Yep. Now you mentioned something called Amplify. Tell me a little bit more about that. Is that a program you have?
So Amplify is our flagship program for mid to senior level leaders. It's built around our Simplify to Amplify methodology, which is the one that was globally recognized. And essentially it's a 3-month transformation experience. It starts with an online diagnostic, which is where are you at basically right now? We have a 3-level leadership matrix, which is village fisherman. You're the one involved in doing everything for everybody, to icebreaker leader, which is you can build trust and you can look out for icebergs and solve problems for other people, to amplifier, which is like you're the pebble in the pond. Then they come into a 2-day immersion, which is residential. And we basically teach you the language of Simplify to Amplify. So we teach you about 10 to 15 very simple models, which are playbooks for how to deal with the common challenges. And we don't know which ones those are when you come into the room. The cohort in the room tells us what challenges they've got, and we solve those challenges over the next 2 days using the frameworks that we have. We have 42 of them, but we normally teach about 10 to 15 of them. And then we go into a 3-month support window. And that support window is based around one-on-one coaching calls, hot seat calls where they dial into a group call and they can get a hot seat spot. We call them connect and reflect, which is let's get everybody back together once a month and see how people are doing, which creates vulnerability, accountability, and progress. We have a private podcast, which is here's some of the things that are going on right now that you might be wrangling with. Here's a short, bite-sized 8 to 10 minute episode that you can listen to. We have an AI coaching platform, which is I'm having a drama right now. I'm about to go into a strategy meeting and I don't really know what to say, or I've got to have this difficult conversation with a member of a team. I could do with some help. So we can talk to what's called Aiden. He's basically digital Jimmy, and he'll coach you through here's a great way to approach the conversation. And if you can't get there, he'll mentor you as well. So try this. And then at the end of the 3 months, we have another assessment, which is basically, did you make some progress? And we've seen some sensational results from doing this. And the reason it works, I think, is because we have this kind of really rapid start. We call it the catalyst, because it's this get you fizzing and excited and started on trying some new stuff. But then there's all the support to make sure you're doing something. And we have a WhatsApp group where everybody checks in every week. What was their breakthrough of this week? I tried this and this is what I learned. I tried this and it was a disaster. I tried this and it worked really well. But we do them in cohorts of 12. So we collect 12 breakthroughs per week for 12 weeks. That's 144 breakthroughs, which becomes a little video library for that group in WhatsApp. And you just see the momentum of people going, oh, everybody else tried something this week, so I better try something. But equally, oh, wow, that was a really good idea. I'm going to steal that and try that in my team. So it just creates this kind of collective momentum, trying small new things. And if I tell you one of the tools we teach, just to show you how simple this is, one of the biggest barriers to our leaders is they're so busy and they're trying to get all their work done, but somebody's always banging on their door with, hey, boss, can I ask you this? Hey, boss, can I check this with you? Hey, boss, what do you think about this? And they never get momentum in their day. So one of the tools we teach is, what do you suggest? It's like a little reflection tool. It's, I'm not going to answer your question. What do you suggest? I'm not going to go to the neuroscience, but there's a whole heap of neuroscience that sits behind this in terms of trust building, psychological safety, creative momentum, influence, blah, blah, blah. What it basically does is it means that I, as leader, don't have to solve your problem now because I'm asking you what you think you should do. And that creates one of three outcomes. What do you suggest? Yes, go do that. No, don't do that. Let's try another option. Or yes, nearly, but make sure you think about this and off you go. But that means I'm not distracted now. And if we keep doing what do you suggest over a few weeks, eventually Gene comes to Jimmy and says, oh, I'm not actually going to bang on the door because Jimmy's going to ask me, what do I suggest? And my suggestion will be this. So I'll just go and try that. I don't even need to do the banging on the door bit. And that's one of the tools we teach. And it's super simple, right? You can remember that in a heartbeat. And all of the stuff that we teach is like this. It's all one page or less, but it makes a difference. And this is the kind of stuff that's in Amplify. How do we solve for problems like that?
Yeah. Do you have a psychology degree background?
Just a healthy learner interest. And over time, I've done various qualifications in neuroscience, neuromarketing, vocation, blah, blah, blah. But most of it's just been like being interested and reading and learning. And we have a very cool little scheme where every semester we have two MBA students who do a bit of research for us on a topic that I'm nerding out on at that point. And they create a little white paper for us, which then allows me to keep that momentum. But they get this opportunity to do some cool stuff for us as well.
That's so fun. So do you feel like the gamification that seems to be a big trend recently, that is actually, because it's usually simple and some people think, why do that? But does it really get people engaged?
It depends. Gamification is, I think, like many things, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. And what you often see with gamification is rush to the easy stuff. And easy stuff would be things like prizes and bonuses and awards. And we know from the neuroscience of influencing and the neuroscience of motivation that what we call extrinsic motivation, which is basically a motivator that's external to you, so a prize, a bonus, a cash pay rise, is a very short-lived, very ineffective way to motivate people. I'll give you an example. The thought of a pay rise at the end of the year and then getting that pay rise has a 6-week effect over the next 52 weeks in terms of improved engagement, motivation, trust building, and commitment. So extrinsic motivators, which isn't often one that people rush to, is a really bad idea. A good idea, if you want to gamify something, is what we do on the WhatsApp group. It's accountability and transparency. So everybody else is doing this, so I better do it as well. And we make it perfectly obvious and evident. And I'm often in the WhatsApp groups across the different cohorts. And I'll say, oh, Gene, that was brilliant. What was it that you got out of that? And we'll have a little backwards and forwards on that everybody can see. And so it becomes this transparency, accountability that I should do something. And we're pushing the right types of behaviors by gamifying it, by making it this, I've got to be in this. I want to be part of the club or the gang or the team that's going through it. So depending on how you use gamification, then it can be really powerful. Equally, it can be very unmotivating if you use the wrong bits.
Yeah, that makes sense. So tell us a little bit about what type of businesses are ideal for you.
We have two really interesting client bases. So the first group would be what I would call a smaller business. So maybe up to 100 people. and the boss has worked his way up through the ranks and is now running this really busy organization that they just don't know where to go next. They're working as hard as they can, the team is working as hard as they can, and they're not really sure what the problems are, but they're basically whacking moles and putting fires out day in, day out. So we go in and we work with them and their leadership team to essentially rethink how they're approaching their leadership. And because of obviously run an eight-figure business myself, I can generally talk to most of these organizations and say, look, there's some commercial challenges here and there's some strategic challenges and there's some leadership challenges. So we work in that sense to help them line up. And many of these, even in this year, we've doubled one and we've tripled another just in terms of turnover and increased profitability of both just by sitting and talking with them for 60 minutes every other week. And so we can really make a difference in those small businesses really fast. And we're talking multi-million dollar businesses. So it's good jumps. So that's one kind of client group. The other kind of client group that we have tends to be HR managers in slightly larger organizations who are looking around for something a bit different in the mid to senior leadership development space. So maybe they've been tasked to implement a new leadership program, or they're struggling to get a leadership program off the ground, or they had one and it wasn't really working and they're doing a bit of a refresh and they want something that's practical and applied and works and is proven. Then we generally have really good conversations with those people. So they tend to be a head of leadership, head of HR, head of learning, one of those kind of roles in medium to large organizations. And they tend to be the corporate style across industries, fairly agnostic. We seem to get lots of calls from construction companies, IT companies, banks, FMCG. Haven't worked a lot in the transport sector, which is ironic because my entire military career was logistics, but hey, I'm open to a conversation.
I love that. This has been fantastic, Jimmy. I feel like I've learned so much from you. I know there's people listening who are thinking, I need to connect with him or I need to connect someone with him. So what is the best way for them to reach out to you?
Probably multiple ways. The easier one is email, jimmy@jblhighperformance.com. That's probably the easiest way. Everybody loves to email. You can go to our website, jblhighperformance.com, and on there you can find our newsletter, blog, podcast, books, blah, blah, blah. Tells you a little bit about what we do. And also LinkedIn. I'm super active on LinkedIn. Jimmy Burrows with a funny spelling. Apparently like the guy from Cheers. My name's, but yeah, absolutely happy to connect with anybody. And if there's somebody that you think would benefit from what we do, or if you would just like an open conversation, we don't do sales pressure tactics or anything like that. It's if we think we can help, we will. If we can't, we'll tell you. And I like to just have a kind of refreshingly honest conversations with people.
I love that. Thank you. Last question for you is, if you could provide one tip to make the world a better place, what would that be?
Nobody will notice if you're doing 80%. One of the things we teach our leaders is if you're running at 100% all the time, you're actually missing things because you're making mistakes. You're missing the bigger opportunities that could come along because you're so busy putting out fires and whacking moles. And so if you dial back to 80%, your performance will actually increase. And so knowing what 80% looks like and knowing when you go over 80%, what that looks like is an important measure for you to be aware of and to make others aware of around you, because nobody really notices if you're going from 100 to 80% other than you get better at what you do.
Yeah. Such great advice. Well, Jimmy Burrows, this has been such a delight for me. I'm so grateful that you joined me today. So thank you for being on our show.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today on Blueprints for Brilliance Coaching Insights. We hope you're leaving this episode with inspiration to take your coaching business and your life to the next level. If you found value in this episode, we would love it if you would subscribe and share it with someone else who you think might benefit from hearing it. Thanks, and we'll see you in the next episode.